Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We've got another special episode where we've got another co-host, apart from me and him, Steve.
Me and you.
We've got a special guest this time who's been on a rebike conversation with me. It's Bertie Cordingley.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay, and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. Bertie Cordingley, say hello and introduce yourself. You can use your first name only, if you like.
Thanks for telling me how I can pronounce my own name. It's very kind of you, Tim. My name's Bertie. Bertie Cordingley, depending what Tim wants to call me today. Actually, he generally calls me a lot worse than that. But I'm an entrepreneur. Thank you very much for having me on today. Very, very kind of you. I believe we're going to be talking about marketing, aren't we, and stuff. Is that what this is all about?
Yeah. In a loose sense of the word, me and Steve usually start with some kind of idea in and around marketing in mind and then go wherever we like.
Yeah, it very rarely ends up with a discussion in marketing.
It just moves over. Okay, that's good.
But everything stems from marketing. It always ends on marketing as well. It's kind of strange. But it's
everything has a marketing spin, doesn't it? And that's, this is why, I mean, like now, I just sort of said, now I work as a business coach. So I coach and mentor and help people with running their own businesses. And that's come from my own experience of running businesses, right? But I'm not a trained marketer by any sense of the word, but every single aspect of the places that I've worked in has to have a marketing spin. You've got to be a marketer to run a business. So that's probably what I'll add in there. In fact, that's all I've got to say on it. So how long was that? That's good. That's a record,
that
isn't
good.
It?
That was good for Friday afternoon podcast. 17 minutes of wonderfulness. You have to be a marketer in the business. But it's true, right? Like me and Steve have argued many times in the book. Well, not argued, just said, because it's our podcast. We can do what we like. Yeah. But we've said that like everything is kind of marketing. In fact, we just had a conversation of where does marketing start and where does it end, right, for another episode of this season. And we figured out that, where did we define it? We defined it that from the understanding before you're trying to decide on a product or service offering is where marketing starts. That research bit, that customer focus bit. And then the end is like managing the legacy of the brand after it's closed, what people think about it after they've stopped using it. Do you know?
Forever. It was realistically from understanding what it is to forever is what marketing covers, encapsulates.
I answered a very similar question recently, and that was my view as well. I see marketing as very, from that first, like, more the awareness of what your product or service is, like getting it out there, right, the whole customer journey. I think all of that stuff has to be right, and that it's not necessarily the responsibility of a marketing department, but I think the whole system works far better when everything talks to each other and everything's just all in sync. So it's all about, you know, your sales process follows what marketing are doing, etc. But then equally, your customer service has to follow that as well and ensure that you're providing the right service in relation to the right things that are being marketed. Everything is joined up. And I think this is where a lot of people get it wrong. I think this is where it goes wrong, where you try and outsource marketing, but then the rest of your business is like a leaky bucket, essentially. So you can have the best marketeer, and it's a podcast, and I did the whole like little finger wavy thing, the best marketeer in the world, sending traffic to your website, but if it's shit and it doesn't convert, then it's the two things don't work together. So you need that alignment of resources, really. People, it's not the same thing, but it's knowing the whole funnel is the way that I see it.
You touched on something really important there, which is what is a marketer? So a lot of people class a marketer as somebody, and this is where we've come to over three series probably of this now, is
a lot of people's first view of what marketing is outward comms messaging, and it's not actually anything else. Whereas your website is probably one of your biggest marketing tools, as is email campaigns, as is social media, as is understanding, defining customer journey, as is defining the story, all these different things that plug in. And if you aren't doing that as a marketer, I'm sorry, but I don't think you're a marketer. If you've not got that big viewpoint of all of it, then actually you're a specialist individual SEO marketer, or you are a social media person. You're not actually a marketer.
I completely agree. I mean, you know, there's arguments there. You know, you might have somebody that is really, really shit hot at, I don't know, SEO, for example, or email marketing, or maybe social media marketing. Then they don't understand, you know, how the rest of the funnel works. Maybe because they're that good at it, they don't need to know. But that it's you can, and a lot of people look for that silver bullet and like, okay, you know, this person's really good, we're going to hire them to do my social media. But that's only as good as what the next step is, and then the next step, and the next step. And I think that's where it goes, can go wrong. So there are no silver bullets in this. And this is why I always advise people to do their own marketing, certainly in the early days. It's like, because there's so much learning to be had. If you're going to be putting some stuff out on social media, or running a Facebook ad, then you need to be testing, actually seeing what's working, seeing what's not. And then you get an understanding of it. And then when people land on your website, are those people converting? And how then do you take those right to the end? What happens when those leads come in? Is someone actually picking up the phone and following up? But there's so many points of failure. So I think once you understand all of that process, what you'll then find is a bottleneck. And that bottleneck might then be, okay, all of my processes working, tickety-boo now. Now we need more leads. So this whole funnel is working. Now we can turn on the tap. And that might be the point to then hire a specialist in one specific area. But hiring that too early can just lead to a whole shit show of disappointment, because they're doing their job, but you're not doing yours as a business owner. And this is why I think you need to understand all of that first.
Yeah. You absolutely nailed that. It is, and don't get me wrong, I don't want other, you know, SEO specialists, if they do listen to this or whatever, you think that I'm having a go at them about being not being a marketer. What I'm saying is you're phenomenal at SEO, and I'm crap at it as everybody else, but at least I've got a viewpoint across everything. Therefore, I can go, I need an SEO specialist, or I need an email campaign manager who's really good and can get people enticed. It's bringing in, like you said, if you're just a specialist in one of those areas, you don't know the full journey. And actually, the marketing game realistically comes through to awareness or sales at some point. And if you're not doing one of those, then you're not marketing properly.
That's right. And I think, I think probably the point that you were trying to make, and I've seen this so many times, is when, you know, that you sort of flip that and someone wants that, I don't know, maybe let's just say I'm this SEO person now. And again, like you, like I used to be actually really good at SEO, no longer. Things change, right? But if I'm going to you, Stephen, I've looked at your website and I can drive loads of traffic, etc. You know, just pay me X, I'm gonna change your business overnight. Those people exist. And I'm not, you know, probably they're not marketers. You know, they're the ones that are saying snake oil, and they might be able to do a good job, they might do a reasonable job, or they might do a crap job, but it doesn't matter if that website doesn't convert anyway. So that's the reason, that's why it's not working.
I hate them just as much. It's that whole thing of, you know, when you're offered a course for £10 to become a graphic designer? And it's like, you'll be a graphic designer if you spend £10 as an hour. You won't.
You definitely won't.
People get sucked into it, and it really pisses me off that people are selling this dream of utopia that isn't there. It's frustrating.
I think that's a big issue, because I'm not a designer, as anybody will know if they've seen any deck that I've ever done. But I thought when Canva came out, I love Canva, right? Canva helps me be better at being shit designer. I'm still a shit designer. I'm just shit using Canva, right? It's a whole different kettle of fish. But I think that's like every bit of marketing kit and software and every agency and consultant, right? When they go into a small business, right, will automatically, I think, try and upstager say they've got the system, the trick, the thing that they love doing, like social media or AdWords. I go, oh, well, it's an AdWords product. Like, you just do more AdWords. I go, yeah, but we've done AdWords and it's not worked. I'm going, ah, but our AdWords will be better. But then, but they don't, I don't know, they don't do that piece of work going, well, actually, who are you, like, do you understand your customer? Is your product shit, right? You can't outmarket a shit product.
No, that's right.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, where I think that's why marketing gets such a comes with a, such a lot of baggage. Like, if you remember back in networking days when we're allowed to go networking in person, if you said you were from marketing, people would go, and you go, not that, not what you think it is. Not those 14 people that you've had in over the past 2 years going, I can fix it, give them 2 months and then go, wait, I haven't got any more leads. I'm like, but they've just rewritten some blog. They've written 14 blogs for you.
Mm.
Like, that's all they've done. They've not done any marketing. Do you know what? And I think that's an issue with the industry, right? They've got to, I don't know how to fix it.
It's not just the industry, though, is it? It's everybody's perspective of what marketing is. You know, what you just said there is somebody gets somebody in to do something and it's completely misaligned.
What
marketers think they do compared to what people think marketers do is completely misaligned.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to go crush there, but it just made me think. I think that can probably be the same for most industries. Like, you know, it just resonated then, Tim, when you were saying, like, at a network meeting, you're saying you're marketing and, like, you know, people, you'd see that look. I think you get that, like, you know, with an accountant or a business
people.
And it might not necessarily be for the same reasons, but everybody has preconceptions about every single industry, right?
Yeah.
So I think that happens. But do you think that then limits us almost? Do you think then we start behaving differently because we're perceiving that someone's thinking something differently? Like, you're already apologising, aren't you, then, for being a marketer?
This is it, right? So I know, like, I've been working in, like, as a in marketing roles, related marketing roles, right, for like 20 odd years, right? And all the new clients I've had, right, I've never walked into a new business meeting a client who's gone, I bloody love marketing, I love it, like, everything's amazing, like, I love my website, I love my copy, I love Facebook, I love it, like, nobody likes it, only marketing people, right? Only marketing people rave about marketing stuff. Right. That's all we do. And I reckon, you know, that I don't know how to shift that, but I think it comes with so much expectation and baggage and the wrong perceived thing that each one of these agencies or marketers or softwares have got a magic switch that will turn marketing all right for people. And they'll go, well, we'll give them 3 months. They'll flick the switch and stuff will happen. Where it's, like, it's never ends, right? It's a process. You have to, like, marketing is never finished. You haven't done marketing. Do you know what I mean? And that's, I don't know. It's just a thing I've been banging on about for ages. And I think it's a difficult switch. To be honest, like, I know, Bertie, you and you, Steve, have worked for some larger organizations, right? I think it's different the larger the business. You know, if they've got a decent budget and a long time frame to achieve a thing, like a 10, 15, 5-year goal, maybe, to increase market share, I think their value perception of market changes compared to startup or small business who, you know, have maybe got 3 months worth of cash in the bank, but then they need to sell some stuff.
Do you know? That's typical things though, isn't it? Because you've got, you know, startups are quite often trying to gain traction or try and gain awareness, whereas when you're in those big organisations like I've worked in, it's all about protection of what you've got, not so much about growth. Growth is a nice thing, and it's great to be able to tell people about new products and services and what have you, but it's more about protecting what's already coming in while slightly growing. And once you've already got a core customer base there, it's easy to go and tell them the same message slightly differently. It's very easy to release a new product to customers that have already bought from you. And in that startup world, you're looking for new all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the How do we fix that? Let's ask Bertie.
Yeah, Bertie knows. That's why he's on here.
How do we actually fix it? I think it starts from... I think the responsibility comes from the person who is booking that marketing person, in the same way, exactly the same if they're commissioning someone for a website or something else. And this is what I try and drill into people. I think you've got to understand exactly what it is, what you want, understand what that bottleneck is. And I'm not saying that you're going to know whether this marketing tactic is going to work, because a lot of stuff is experimentation and learning. But if you're trying stuff, then you have to be prepared that some of that stuff isn't going to stick. But the most important thing with that is to measure it. So if I'm saying, right, Tim, great, you're amazing at design, I'm going to bring you in and we're going to try this new creative for some ads and stuff like that, then we want to be pushing that out there, testing what works, testing what doesn't. And if it works, brilliant, double down on it. Let's have more of Tim. But if it doesn't work, sorry, Tim, you tried it. No hard feelings, but we need something different because this didn't work. And I think it's a lot of the time it is being a leader is to, you know, to say yes and to say no to things, but understanding what you want rather than saying, Tim, I'm really stuck here. My business needs to grow. I think I need marketing. And then I'm letting you dictate to me what you need, because I'm putting the responsibility on you then. And if you are the sort of person, there's not many people I do know people that would do it. So some people would actually turn around to that business owner and say, we could do all this. However, you're not at that stage yet because I think you've got problems further down in the funnel, right? Or maybe your product's not right, or, you know, you can't polish a turd. Literally, sometimes you have to tell, and my job half the time is telling people what they don't want to hear. Yeah. So I think you've got to understand, I think, you know, you as the business owner have to take that responsibility for stuff and actually be ring fencing the things that you're going to test and actually, you know, measure what works and what doesn't, and be really disciplined in that and be really disciplined in it. Because a lot of people do just try stuff and then they don't know why it works or things didn't work. I mean, let's think that Yellow Pages, right? So bear in mind, when I was, so fillmybelly.com was a business that I had that was an online takeaway that sold to Just Eat in 2012. Going back to 2006, I was selling this to takeaways. My main competitor, the main thing that people didn't want to spend on any online advertising, because the internet was just a fad right then and never take off, because they advertised in Yellow Pages. And I always used to say, okay, so how much business do you get from Yellow Pages? And nobody could tell me. Why do you advertise in Yellow Pages? Because we always have.
Everybody else does.
Yeah, everybody else does. And it's and this mindset does still exist today. People do still do things because they're seeing their competitors doing them. Like, oh, so-and-so's just had a rebrand. And don't get me started on rebrands, right? So-and-so's just had a rebrand. We need a rebrand. A rebrand is going to completely change our business. No, it's fucking not, dickhead, right? Your business isn't working because it's shit. There's loads of problems going on. Just putting a nice lick of paint on it isn't going to make it any better. So this ends, but you can get so fixed on this like whole rebrand and it's just tunnel vision sometimes. So yeah, how do we fix it? I think loads of people have to come together and work much more synchronously. Is that a word? Than they do now. But you as a business owner have to take ownership for your own business. So if something doesn't work, it's not that marketer's fault. You fucking hired them, right? You hired them. It's your fault. So unless they've, you know, blatantly lied to you. And then, you know, try something else. So I don't know whether that's answered your question or I've just pissed a load of people off, but that's my answer.
You said a lot of things in that bit. And one thing that because we know each other in the real life, not just on the podcast and stuff, I know a lot of your stuff is... Or has the same theme as that test and learn that you referred to, right? Yeah, I think this week you posted something about Hotjar, maybe.
Yeah,
I think on the internet, but about testing and learning in that space, right? And that, like, I'm a big one on people should just take the time to do a bit of research to understand, to test it, like see what's happening, to understand the situation. Because I still get people ringing me and going, oh yeah, because nobody really understands what marketing is, as we've already established, but going, oh, you work on computers, can't you? What do you reckon? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, I'm terrible at computers. I don't know where you've understand that thing. Or somebody the other day, they realized because I post it on social media that I do a podcast. They went, oh, right, can you train people to do, can you do a talk on like podcast editing and stuff? I went, no, what? No, we outsource it. We outsourced it from day, I haven't even tried. Like, I'm not a thing, but it's that, you know, people, there's so much stuff. Like marketing people are good at producing content, right? It's like every marketer farms stuff out, right? And I think that clouds a lot of people's judgment because they go, oh, TikTok's popular. I need TikTok for my business. And that's as far as they've gone, right? They've not tested, they've not learned, they've not sought to understand. But it's that, how do people get through the marketing quagmire and into the leaders who make the buying decisions to get them to understand what that is? Like, is it because you're on both sides, kind of, Bertie? You're a coach, been a business leader, understand marketing. You like tick all of those boxes, right? What's the best way marketing people listening to this can do that? What do we have to do?
Understand what those expectations are. And if you can't do something, then I've got a lot more respect for you. If you're telling me that you can't do that, than just telling me it's all going to be okay. Because I think sometimes you can set the bar too high. So, you know, when, you know, we were joking earlier about, you know, that the, you know, SEO people, I was just calling business owners dickheads and stuff randomly right there. But, you know, the points I'm trying to get across here are that if you don't define the right expectations, then sometimes you can overpromise on something. And then that just then leads to disappointment. So I think, you know, if you're going in, and so if someone was to come to me now and say, right, I can do SEO, and this is going to change your business overnight, and I'm going to get you all of these leads, et cetera, and you're going to increase your revenue and stuff like that. You know, as soon as you're mentioning my bottom line, that is absolutely nothing to do with it, the SEO. It's a result of it, but there's so many things that happen. So straight away, I've lost respect for that person because I know they're talking bollocks. Whereas if someone specifically is saying that they've been through my website and actually, you know, that I don't know, what is it nowadays? It's not meta titles and keywords. Yeah, there's so much. Yeah. But if they're actually explaining what those problems are and then saying the result of that is I can drive more visits to your website, but, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. It's a long term. And actually being really specific, that's something I can relate to, because if that's my particular bottleneck at that point, if my website is actually converting quite well and I've already thought I need to drive more traffic to that, I don't know what to do it, that's the perfect match. So you've got it, and that isn't going to suit everybody. So yes, you might get, it might be a short-term win to oversell your service, but the long-term result of that is everyone's going to be disappointed and you're never going to get recommended, because I'm going to recommend that SEO person because they were absolutely on the money. And the expectation has been defined right from the beginning. I know exactly what I'm getting. And if those new leads don't convert, then that's on me, isn't it? You know, I've booked because I need new leads, not new leads, new visits.
The thing is, if you're playing a short-term game, you're always going to get found out anyway.
Always.
You've got to go long-term. Could you imagine having to run around finding new business every 2 months because you got found out you couldn't actually do the job anyway?
Yeah. I mean,
that's more stressful for you as a business owner than not.
But people do it though, Steve, right? Like it happens, and it's really, really frustrating when it does. It's like LinkedIn now, when you just get, it's like every other request, it's like you just think, oh, actually, maybe this person wants to ask me a genuine question. And then you just get you've connected, and then straight away they're trying to put it in with no lube. Like it's instant. It's like I think we've shared some connections, so why don't you buy my web services or SEO? It's like, oh, just fuck off. You're supposed to be into marketing. Do you swear on this podcast?
Because we might do now, yeah.
It's always been down as explicit. Always, just in case.
But it's like I get those as well, right? I get people like offering marketing consultants, going, "Hey, I've seen you, so maybe you want some marketing advice." And I, like from somebody who's been doing it maybe 4 months, and I'm like, "Have you even read like the bit underneath my profile? Have you seen what I've been doing for 20 fucking years? Like, I don't need your advice."
Well, we've got mutual connections, and I've seen you're the business owner at Tim Elliott. But it's like...
The ones that I keep getting through at the minute are connections for mortgage brokers. I'm going, is the mortgage game really struggling that much that you're now just going out having random connections on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
That is scary that somebody's gone into there and gone, you know, there's a whole market in LinkedIn. And actually, if you start sending random connection requests, you might hit 1 in 20,000.
But people move house, like statistics show, like real proof data show that people move house between every 3 and 5 years until a certain age.
Yeah.
Right? That's a long shot. Like, you must go, right, how long have they moved house for? Because I know you moved like in the last couple of years. Go, well, they're not ready.
Yeah.
Thinking about a mortgage for a bit.
It's absolutely crazy that people, but somebody's gone in there, like Bertie said, and said, with a silver bullet.
Yeah.
Go and connect with 20 or 30 people a day on LinkedIn. Make sure you stand beneath their barrier limit so you don't get noticed and you don't get kicked off and you get your connection request taken away. But just send it out to as many people as you can over the next year, and I guarantee you'll get one or two.
Yeah, that's it. And it gets back to what you were saying earlier on about, you know, people doing what everyone else has done. Like, you know, that could have been... I'm going to look for the best in someone now because I've been calling everyone dickheads today. So, you know, it could have been someone's like run a little smoke test where you're just testing this. Okay, let's just try 100 people. Let's see what we get out. They maybe sent that to a mortgage broker, and then this mortgage broker has gone, oh, this mortgage broker's doing this. Let's do that. And then it has a snowball effect. And then suddenly all mortgage brokers are messaging people on LinkedIn.
I'm not joking. I think I've had 6 in the last 2 weeks.
That's great. Yeah, I haven't had that. I get loads of very different random things, but I don't think I had mortgage brokers yet. Yeah. But I don't accept everyone, and I've changed my LinkedIn from connect to follow, so it's a little bit more effort now for people
to actually. For it can't be automated. Some
yeah. Right? Well, I think it still can, because I still get some weirdos trying to connect. I was just tell you another funny story, actually. Just again, networking meeting, like an in-person one. There was these little talks that I used to get invited to, and I wasn't officially in part of this group, but someone used to sneak me in, and that was really cool. So I was always sort of like keeping myself under the radar, and I was never there as a business coach. So I but there was one guy, and I was sat at a table, and he was a marketing director for a marketing firm. So, and he was sat opposite me, and I was just talking to this couple about how they could, I can't even remember who it was, but yeah. I felt I was giving them some very good, sensible advice on how to grow their business. And then this dickhead chirped in, right? And he's like, right, I'm going to tell you how you can grow your business, right? So, marketing director from a marketing agency. So what you want to do, you want to go onto LinkedIn and send out 1,000 requests a week. 1,000 requests a week. You just send the same thing, and I guarantee you'll get one or two people like coming back to you. But like I said, that's 2 leads a week. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you telling people this? Why?
Maybe there's loads of that, right? There's loads of that. I know a social media, quite a well-known social media agency that have in their bios, in their things, right? We've created £3 million worth of sales for our clients from our tweets. I'm like, what? Like just the tweets, like the quality of the product, the reputation of the brand, the website had nothing to do, like literally from the tweets.
Buy this. £3 million.
Like, I just got, like, it's that sort of proposition. We should be good at propositions, marketing people.
But we're not. A lot of marketing people do not know how to do propositions. And it's one of the biggest fundamental pieces that is missing from a lot of people's arsenal. Yeah. Is understanding what a proposition is.
Just taking that time that Bertie said earlier before we went off on the 14th rant of the show, that was show that you understand the problem, right? Do the work first, right? Don't just turn up with a pitch, right? Don't just go, my job is to get as many pitches out as humanly possible, and someone's going to buy one. Right? It's to go, this is the actual problem. That's giving value up front, right? That's going, I've took the time to look at your website, and you've got this problem. Like, this is useful information for you, even if you don't choose me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's that.
It's the value add piece, isn't it? That's the bit why people are going to buy you, because you're already creating value from day one without even contracting with them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It just people forget, don't they, that there's it's they're marketing to people. I think this is it. Like, and you know why I get, one of the reasons I get so passionate and angry and start ranting about stuff, because a lot of the time I'm talking to myself from like 5 years ago or 10 years ago, because these are like all of these mistakes I've made. I've blasted people with cold email. I've sent out automated, you know, like if you look back at my Twitter feed like 2 or 3 years ago, it was just, I'd set up like an automation just to retweet. But I've done all this stuff and it doesn't work. Like, you know, there's been times where I've bought followers for business just to think, oh, actually, it just gives it that little bit of credibility, and then spend weeks unpicking the damage that stuff like that does.
Yeah.
So it's, I get angry about it because I just want to go back sometimes and like, just don't do that. Don't do that. Like, I see people making those mistakes, those same mistakes, it's like, it's just avoidable, and it's just common sense. And sometimes the methods is just to have a little rant about it, and then people can say, oh, yeah, maybe I won't do that. Or they'll think, actually, this guy's talking dickhead, I'm going to go do it anyway.
Right. So, you know, I've worked for a business before that's gone, oh, we need more followers on Twitter, or we need more likes on Facebook. And I'm going, you don't. What you actually want is more engagement. You want more conversation with like-minded people who are likely to buy what you want. No, that's not what I want. I literally want, right, I'll go and buy you some from Russia then. You know, we'll go and buy you 10,000 followers from Russia if you want. Oh no, because that's just going to screw all our data. And it's like, well, you can't have both. Either you want real conversations that are going to turn into something that takes time to build. It doesn't come overnight. Or I'll go and buy you your stuff and you can hit all your KPIs that you've put in place in the first place. The thing is, it depends on what you're measuring, doesn't it? You know, like you said before, Bertie, so you said you've got to measure everything. Some people are measuring the wrong thing.
It's the part, and this is what I work with people, right? It's working on the part of the funnel that, when I talk about bottlenecks, but, you know, basic like categories for metrics, I use, I forgot my own metrics. So you've got like... acquisition, activation, referral, retention, and revenue. And I was going to put, sometimes you can put awareness at the top of there, but they're generally known as like the pirate metric. So this is like the startups, because something. Yeah, the AARR funnel. Yeah. That was a terrible pirate. Just, can you edit that out?
You're gonna leave it in, aren't you? Keep that one in, John.
Yeah, keep that one in. Thanks. Anyway, it's not my joke, but yeah, these are super powerful and super important. So, you know, going back to like activation, this is, acquisition. So all the stuff that generally marketeers are marketing work in this acquisition point, but then there's the activation after that. And it's what happens. What is that first meaningful interaction with that customer? Varies on business to business. With some, it might be downloading an app. With some, it might not necessarily be downloading the app. It might be, when they've taken the first step in the app, for example. So let's take something like Tinder. The first meaningful interaction might be when they swipe left or swipe right on there. You know, and that's the point that they're activated. And then you've got retention. You know, do users come back? Referral, do they tell others? And then revenue is just a result 99% of the time of all of those other things. The reason that I say 99% of the time is because obviously you can increase prices, which directly impact revenue. So, you know, so there are things you can do to increase revenue, but a lot of people think, oh, I need to increase revenue, and then start making silly decisions without looking at the rest of the funnel. So marketing, and when you're bringing someone in, they're generally only working on that initial part, that first part of the funnel. And that's why I say that you need to have the rest of the things. You know, you have to understand those points. So they're the KPIs that I
work with, and you can always categorize generally under those, which I found really helpful. So I don't know, which do you like, have any like core KPIs or anything that you talk about?
Not written down that way. I've got no pirate ones. I'm no going to use them.
Pirate magic.
I quite often use the McKinsey customer decision journey for purchasing and where marketing would sit with inside that. That's one that I always revert back to. Where it goes through from trigger information through to customer loyalty, ambassadorship, all those different things. And I try to measure against those. I've often tried not to measure against revenue.
It's the right thing to do.
It's a really hard thing for, as soon as somebody says to me in a marketing, in marketing, what is your ROI? It's very hard to prove a full return of ROI. You can only do it against a sale of something, but you can't do it against awareness quite often. You can't do it against reach or all those different things. So as soon as people want to be involved in an ROI discussion in revenue, in marketing, I try to back away from it, in honesty. Not because I don't want to show what it actually does, but because I think people misconstrue the data at the back end.
And it's difficult for you to, it's difficult for you to do that. Getting back to the point earlier, if they've got a leaky bucket, essentially, like you can be doing the best job in the world, but if they're not converting, like if the activation piece, which wouldn't be your responsibility as a marketer, that would be mine as the person that would be hiring you. You're sending me the leads. I've got to convert them, right?
Yeah.
That impacts the ROI. So, I think ROI is a very difficult thing as a marketer to, a marketing agency to put in there. But there's still lots of other metrics that you can be, be talking about in there. But ROI is a tricky one, and it's so much harder now. Like back in the day, going back to 2008, running AdWords campaigns, it was dead simple. Someone searches for takeaway Nottingham. I've bought the AdWord takeaway Nottingham, or I'd bought the AdWord for every single takeaway that exists anywhere in Nottingham. So someone's looking for Bombay spice and whatever, boom, fill my belly, order Indian online instead of ringing up. That's it. They order. You can attribute that to it. AdWords cost was probably about £1. We made £1.20. Customers came back for at least 2 years. Jobs are good, right? Happy days.
I was one of those, Bertie. The first thing that I ordered online was through Fill My Belly.
Really?
Yeah.
So I took your online virginity.
Well, I wouldn't say put it that. So I used eBay and stuff like that before, but for ordering takeaway online, Fill My Belly was the one that I went to.
Happy days going back.
We did.
Yeah, it's easy. But now, how fucking hard is it, right? You've got all the social touch points and things like that. And it's like, how do you, when do you actually attribute that sale? Is it the point that they first saw it on social? I've seen loads of different algorithms and AI, we'll figure out what your channel attribution is. Who knows, right?
Yes.
So are we trying to measure too much though? I personally think we try to measure way too much. And if you stand back before the internet was here and you could get data and et cetera, it was, have you talked to somebody? Have they agreed? Have they signed the contract? Have they paid? And it was really as simple as that. And the deal's done. And as soon as you start to go into that measurement piece and growth piece and different pieces, I do think that we try and concentrate on too much data, and too much data misconstrues other parts.
Yeah.
I think attribution, that word attribution Bertie said, is a thing, right? Because I think we measure too much, right? And it's difficult to prove massive tangible business values because things like increasing market share and stuff like that, right? Is like it knowing whether the stuff you're doing today works for that is 5 years away, right? Yeah. It's 5 years. It's not, we can't ROI it at the end of the month because the payoff is so far away. Same with stuff like social media and awareness, right? It's so far away that doing a monthly marketing report is crazy. I do some lecturing sometimes for Nottingham Uni, marketing students, young'uns, and their marketing plans that they come up with in the first semester are, we're going to buy some Instagram influencers and get them to sell it. I'm like that. What, and that's it, is it? How are you going to make that a 14,000 word thing? What about the product? What about the price of the product? But who's it for? And they're like, what? Right, the Instagram, the people will sell it. I'm like, no, it's not the way it works. But that word attribution, I think, helps you choose the right tools you use in marketing. Like, if you can prove attribution to an e-commerce product from a well-performing Facebook ad, then do more of that stuff because it works, right? The click-throughs and the sales you can track via Google Analytics, right? That stuff works. Do more of that. Get somebody to do it who can tweak that and scale it and amplify it, right? Like, get an agency in, but don't... I think attribution and measurement should be used to test and learn which tools and channels and formats are best for you. And then just do, the strategy is just do more of the stuff that works for a while. I've been a consultant mainly. So my work is in the first third of stuff. I very rarely, I'm still hanging around at the end of whatever strategy we've done for 5 years, right? I might go back intermittently, but like, nothing works forever. Like, the Facebook ad that did really well in the beginning will not always be amazing, right? You have to iterate it, right? But you must, is that right, Bertie? Do you think you've probably done more of this stuff than we have?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's... The thing with that, like, I'm not a social media expert, like, or, you know, any marketing expert or any expert in anything.
I'm not either. Matter.
But, you know, what it's, I read people and I see trends and things like that. And, you know, when I hear people say, oh, the algorithm's changed, and start bitching about it, right? It's like, okay, for one, let's just get this clear. You're using a social media platform, which is free, for, you know, to free market your business, right? You're not paying for ads. Like, things change. Mm-hmm. And it's the reason the algorithm is actually there, that protects, probably the wrong word, but it's actually there to make the experience better. You know, like, it's not necessarily, I'm not defending Facebook at all, you know, but it's not that they're going in there like, you know, we want to piss off Stephen because of his, you know, we want him to start paying for ads, right? It's to make the experience better. So if Steve had found a way to beat the algorithm and to start, you know, so every time someone's logging onto Facebook, all I'm seeing is, you know, Steve there going, hey, buy my shit, hey, buy my shit, hey, buy my shit. Then the algorithm is there to stop that happening.
Yeah,
it's there to make my experience, because if they don't do that, I'm going to get pretty fucking bored of going onto social media, because I don't want to see Steve peddling his whatever he's selling today all the time. You know, I might want to see, you know, Steve doing entertaining content, which actually then beats the algorithm. It's not beating anything. It's just showing me as a user more relevant things. So, you know, when people complain about the algorithm changing and stuff like that, I think you've got to put it into context. It's a free platform, for one. So, you know, make hay where the sun shines. Like, people are bitching at the moment, oh, yeah, there's Instagram Reels are out now. It's something else I have to learn. But, you know, Reels are doing really well, but I can't be asked to learn it. It's like, well, don't fucking learn it then, but you won't get the benefits of it. People can't be bothered with LinkedIn, whereas LinkedIn's so fucking powerful at the time of... you know, that we're recording this. I don't know when people are listening, but just the other week, I commented or posted, either I posted something or commented on something. Someone in my network had liked that. So not even like, they'd literally clicked like, which meant it got shown in his feed to someone I wasn't connected with then, contacted me and became a customer. Like, you can't buy that sort of reach at the moment on, you know, on social media platforms, yet people bitch about it. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's my view on algorithms and things like that. I think it's, you've just got to put them into context and don't try and beat them. Just try and make content and make stuff that's going to entertain people.
It's that you can only control the controllable, right? You can't control what decisions Facebook, you can't control what people are going to do on the other end of it, right? But you can control your actions. Again, reverting to what Bertie said about the test and learn, you can control doing the research and figuring out the problem and doing understanding, because that's up to you, right? That's your actions that you can control. So stop worrying about all the, whether Instagram are going to launch an audio thing to take over Clubhouse, right? which is the current thing. Like, you can see, like, it's got
Twitter's launched one today, haven't they? Like, you know, that's supposed to be the new Clubhouse killer. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
Like, you know,
Clubhouse will kill itself anyway, eventually. Let's be honest. You know, I mean, Clubhouse is great, but it's a fad. It's a new fad. You know, and there's been so many of them over the last 20 years. I would be really surprised if it stuck around. It'll just get acquired. You know, if it is that popular, LinkedIn will just go out and buy it.
Like Meerkat was a thing that was like, I jumped on ages ago, that was, I think is basically Instagram Live, technically.
Right.
Like a few years ago, and it was amazing, but like, it's not in your control. Like, people, like, I wanted, like, from my experience within business, worry about the wrong stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's very much the same as your work, but from a slightly different angle. I spend most of my time with people, like in consultancies and stuff, telling people to stop doing some stuff. Like, why are you doing that? What? Like, what? Like, tell me why you're doing it. Like, well, stop it then. Like, take it out. Do you know what? Like, if you can't justify it, if you run a business and you can't actually, or a marketing department, right, and you can't justify why you're doing a thing, off the top of, like, not off the top of your head, but easily, right, then why are you doing it?
Yeah. Interesting. These questions, like the things that you're saying, these are things that, like, not all investors, but when people are taking decks to investor meetings, right, and you say, like, as an investor and being in investor meetings and pitched and been part of all this, it's, you know, these are the questions that get asked. It's like, okay, so you're spending that much on there, but actually, where's the return on it? Why are you doing it? And, you know, stuff like that puts it into the spotlight. So unless you've been through that investment, creating a deck and really had to scrutinize where you're spending your time, money and energy and resources, a lot of people don't actually take the time to do that. So you just end up doing the same things and making the same mistakes or just coasting along and not realizing that there's a world of opportunity probably just from you taking the time back. But a lot of the time we don't do it because I was talking to earlier in the week, it almost feels like you're being a little lazy. It's like, oh, I'm not in front of a spreadsheet or I'm not designing something. I'm literally sat on my whiteboard with a pen for a couple of hours thinking. It doesn't really feel like I'm working. But it is, you know, you do need to take that time to step out, not just once every 3 months, every week. You've got to be thinking, planning what you're going to be doing on your business. You end up working on the right stuff.
Now you're investing, Bertie, on that front. Do you miss that burning desire and that new product idea that you had with Fill My Belly, for example? Do you miss those days of, you know, at 2-3, getting up at 2 a.m. to start doing work and being so bought into something? Or was it just a stressful time and actually it's much easier doing what you're doing now?
It's probably the same amount of stress. I mean, you know, the much more, you know, it's I've got a financial cushion, you know, for want of a better word now, you know, it takes that pressure off, you know, so that's better. I wouldn't say I'm much more risk averse now, but, you know, going back to like Fill My Belly, you know, that was bootstrapped and didn't take any money out because it wasn't making anything for a good like 2 or 3 years. And as soon as it made like its first 10 grand, that was then gone on the first hire, for example. So everything was ploughed back in. So, you know, but the amount of work and the way that I worked is probably still similar to what it is now. It's just that, you know, I'm not moving money from interest-free credit cards at the end of the month to try to figure out, and I'm not having to sell my car or worrying about, you know, all the other stuff, you know, that, you know, that's the only difference. But I suppose what I'm a lot better at now, and this is why I was saying, you know, sometimes I wish I could go back and give myself this advice, recognizing that I didn't, well, I suppose there's a lot better tools now to be able to, the stuff that I talk about and I help people do is so easy to do. Is that, you know, I flippantly say, you know, if you want to test a product, build a landing page and run some Facebook ads, right? And literally you can have a landing page up and some ads running in like a couple of hours, a morning's work, you know, a couple of days if you really want to take your time over it. You couldn't do that, you know, even like 15 years ago. So it was a lot more difficult. So, you know, to get that sort of traction, you had to work a lot harder on things. So yeah, I'd love to know what I know now and go back and apply it. So But I get much more passionate now about other people's ideas, probably than my own. And it's funny when people like come to me with a business idea, and that it's exactly the same thing with me. I never told anyone about it for a couple of years. Like people will come like, oh, you know, can we sign an NDA? It's like, well, no, not really, because I hear a lot of ideas, and you know, I don't really know who I'm working with, whatever. And then they'll tell me that idea. It's like, yeah, I had that idea a couple of years ago. I'm not doing anything with it. Doesn't mean it's not bad. It's just that, you know, it's not anything I was passionate about. But go for it, right? Like, and the way that I always judge it is, can you think of a winner in the market right now? Like, is there someone out there that you think, you know, when you think of that idea and you think of that name? So if you think taxis, you'll think Uber, you think Takeaway, you'll think just like, is there a winner out there? Is it like, you know, there might be a few people playing about with it, but is there a winner? And if there's not, then as far as I'm concerned, it's all to play for. So, you know, it's there's lots of, there's no original ideas out there. So, you know, we've got to get that right. Even though, you know, Fill My Belly genuinely was a completely original idea, Just Eat had already launched that in Denmark four years before. They only came into the UK in 2006 and launched 3 months before us. So I even had the argument, oh, well, we bought the domain in 2004. You know, we didn't rip you off. It's like, yeah, we're in Scandinavia like 5 years before that, mate. But it didn't necessarily, you know, mean it wasn't an original idea or that we shouldn't go ahead and do it. There was no winner in that space right now, right back then. It was all to play for. And we didn't find out about Just Eat until like about probably a year in. And interestingly, they were probably one of the least that I was worried about. There was all these other ones that had like that these flash designed website, like Adobe Flash, right? Like, shit, like that looks good. We're sending orders on a mobile phone. They're installing fax machines. Like, this is next level stuff here. We should be shitting ourselves. But actually, it was Just Eat that became the winners and got their channel account and bought us.
But that market's rife now as well, isn't it? With Deliveroo's and Uber Eats. And
yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's a very interesting I could talk about a whole podcast, you know, on that stuff. But yeah, that market is rife, you know, and Just Eat have only very recently got into doing their own deliveries. Yeah. You know, Deliveroo and Uber Eats have always done their own deliveries. But interestingly, like, and this has been the time as I left Just Eat in 2015, so 5 years ago. Deliveroo was only just really starting to grow at that point. But because they did their own deliveries, their delivery bikes were fucking everywhere. So it's, and Just Eat don't do their own deliveries, so they're not visible. So what you were getting then was, oh, you must be worried about Deliveroo. Like, you know, we've seen Deliveroo places everywhere. And then once you see one, you see them, but they weren't actually that big then. But the perception was they were huge because they had that, you know, their own visibility. But there's lots of other reasons that they, you know, they've grown to the size that they have, which, you know, we'll cover another time, surely.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was like me back if we're not kicked off for swearing.
No, we'll be all right, I think. But it was we had a discussion to finish off, right? We were talking about, do you, if you're a startup or if you're a marketing person advising a startup, if you're in that world, right, what comes first? Do you spend the time trying to understand, like, what people want and then make that thing? Or do you have an idea to make a thing and then try and get people to want it?
That's what a really good question. I think it sits in the middle. And I think it's very dependent on what the product is or what your service is. For example, if something is already out there, you can actually, I don't know, say I wanted to make a butcher's, open a butcher's. Then it's like, well, I know people want to buy meat, but less and less nowadays, right? But yeah, so it's a lot of that research is already done for you. If it's a new product or a new service, a lot of people have this idea, and they I always hear Apple as an example. Oh, well, Apple tell people what they, you know, what they want to buy and stuff like that. Apple don't. No. Apple do a lot of fucking research, but it's just by the time that you see it, you know, it's done in that much secrecy and people don't even know what they're researching, that when they, you know, it looks like a surprise, but it's not something that's developed in a silo. A lot of work goes into this stuff. So if you have an idea, I would say well, that my generic advice on this, not knowing what the product is, which may change if I did, is, you know, ask people about it first, not friends and family, because, you know, you're always going to get a biased opinion on that. Either, oh, yeah, that's amazing, or that'll never work. Generally nowhere in between. You won't get anything, any objective, anything useful anyway.
Yeah.
I always give the analogy, right? You know, like X Factor, when you see these people and they get like, and you're like, how the fuck did they get to this stage? Why has nobody told them they're shit? The same thing happens with business ideas. So it's like, yeah, you should go ahead. That sounds wonderful. And like, no, it's not. It's really not. So yeah, talk to people about it, as many people as you can. Go networking. And then, you know, do some market research. Like before I went and sold Fill My Belly to Takeaways, it wasn't built, but I had done the whole like standing on the street and ask people with a clipboard whether they'd use it, how many takeaways and stuff they bought. The next stage from that is, you know, what I would call a smoke test. So I referenced this earlier. So then this is where you can create that fake landing page for your product and run some ads to it. And this is really common. It almost sounds a little bit deceptive, but you'll know if you've not seen this already, then you'll start to see this now. Instagram's a great example. An ad will get presented to you on Instagram, and it will be for some new fancy tech widget or something, right? And you'll look at it and think, shit, that's amazing. I want one of that. What about that? Then you start looking at the comments. And what you've got in the comments then is, this company's a scam. When this company's only been formed.
I've seen that.
Yeah, try to buy this page doesn't work, whatever, right? That's a smoke test. What they've done is they've put that out there to see whether you want to buy it. The irony is, every single negative comment, those people wanted to buy that product and are super pissed off that they can't. That's just validated the idea. So that's the next stage. And you can do that with anything, but you just, you know, do it in a different manner. So you have your market research first, and then you would smoke test it, and then you can go ahead and then build it. But at every stage, what you're doing is you're selling the idea. So when you're doing the market research, if people like it, you're saying, you know, do you want me to keep your details and let you know when this launches? The smoke test, you're going through those comments and all the people that have tried to buy and join the beta list or whatever, you're actually then saying to them, no, you were pissed off with that, but the product's now launched now and it's fucking even better than we put on the advert. Do you want it? So you can, that's your marketing as you're going. But if any of the stages, if people don't want that, and if people are telling you what you don't want to hear, then listen to them, because going and building that product, or going and building that service, or paying all the money on that, don't say to yourself, oh yeah, well, if I actually had the product, maybe I'd explain it better. Maybe if they saw it, maybe they could touch it, feel in their hands. No difference. You've validated it. People have said that it's shit. Now they won't even buy it. So don't fucking build it. But at every stage, it's always a marketing problem. Always. So, you know, it's always then, how are you selling it? And it's you've got to understand that first before you go ahead and build it, is, I think, answers your question.
That's, yeah, it does.
My opinion.
And yes, it's a good soundbite to close on. It's always a marketing problem. Good. Well, folks, everybody say bye. Not at the same time, because it's a podcast and that would be horrible.
Bit like Reddit. Bye.
Bye. What about Steve?
Goodbye. Goodbye, listeners.
Wow, that was posh.
Yes. Weird. Well, just in case we all said bye at the same time, then I'd have a different voice.
Okay.
So people can differentiate. That's all.
All right. Well, that's it, folks. That was the Bertie Cordingley episode, where we swore a lot and ranted a lot, and it was good.